Up next, on the trail of the elusive antimatter.
We have a signal on the luminosity monitors. We have events.
Remember that scene from Angels and Demons? It showed scientists at CERN running experiments with the Large Hadron Collider and capturing antimatter in a bottle. Well, this week, scientists at CERN, real scientists and not the movie variety, announced the same thing, almost. They say they have finally produced and captured antimatter, antihydrogen, exactly, long enough to study it. Not a very long time, though. It's about a second, but it doesn't last long enough to be captured in a vial like in the movie, so they didn't get that part down yet. Here to tell us how they did it and what the physicists hope to learn from this antihydrogen is my guest, Jeffrey Hengst. He's professor in the Department of Astronomy and Physics at Aarhus University in Denmark. And he joins us from Switzerland. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you very much, although I think it's going to be hard to follow that oboe stuff.
You mean antimatter is not sexy enough to follow an oboe made out of a straw? I think it is. How were you able to capture antimatter?
Okay, we have kind of a magnetic trap. Antihydrogen is neutral, so it has no net charge. So you can't trap it the way we normally trap charged particles. But it has a little magnetic character, like a little compass needle that flies around with the atom. So it can be deflected by very strong magnetic fields. And what we did here was we created the antihydrogen atom in the magnetic trap so that if it was cold enough or moving slowly enough, it didn't escape this magnetic bottle.
Hmm. And how many atoms were you able to capture?
Well, in this article, we reported 38 as a proof of principle. This was the first signal that we saw. So, of course, we report the signal as soon as it comes because we've been working a long time to see anything at all.
Hmm.
So this is a proof of principle experiment, but we're making steady progress since then.
Now, what is the difference between antihydrogen and the real or the regular hydrogen we see around us?
That's exactly the question that we'd like to answer. The laws of physics say that hydrogen and antihydrogen should behave in the same way. The problem is that nature chose to only give us matter. You know, people think at the Big Bang there were equal quantities of matter and antimatter, but for some reason the antimatter disappeared. It's like nature took a left turn instead of a right turn and chose matter. So we don't know what happened to the antimatter. So we'd like to study and see if there's some fundamental difference between the two that the current laws of physics have overlooked.
Hmm. And you were able to capture it for 1 second. Is that, and you say this is a proof of concept, does that mean that theoretically you can capture it for a longer amount of time?
Not just theoretically. The antimatter didn't escape in this experiment. We threw it out. The way we show that we've trapped it is to first trap it and then release it intentionally. The thing about antimatter is that when it meets matter, it annihilates. It makes a little microscopic explosion that we're very good at detecting. So the way that you show that you've trapped antihydrogen is to intentionally let it go at a given time. So the time that we stored the antimatter for in the experiment was by choice, not by some limit. We've already succeeded in storing it for much, much longer times.
How much longer?
I can't tell you.
You have to shoot me.
Yeah, it's not like that. It's just we don't quote published numbers. But I usually say it's a number you could measure with a watch.
Oh,
okay.
And when you say, well, isn't there, we always see in the movies and we hear, you know, what happens when antimatter annihilates with matter, there's this huge explosion. Wasn't there a huge explosion or danger of one?
On the microscopic level, it's a huge explosion. But the amount of energy from a few atoms is completely negligible. In fact, the total amount of antimatter produced at CERN in all of its history would barely boil your coffee. Right, so for us, it's easy to detect, but it's of absolutely no danger to anyone, anywhere. I usually say it would take longer than the age of the universe to create just 1 gram of antimatter. So you don't need to worry about that.
Yeah, and now what practical value comes out of this work?
Absolutely none. This is basic research at the most fundamental level. We're asking about what's the structure of space and time? Can we learn something about what we usually refer to as symmetry in nature? Is there a difference between left and right? What happens if time runs backwards? Is there a difference between matter and antimatter? You can actually get paid for trying to answer those questions.
And we think you should, actually. Because not everything has to have a, you know, discernible. Who knows, somewhere down the line there might be. You know, was it Star Trek where they have antimatter running in their engines there?
Yeah, that's true. I don't know where they found that. But if you found some antimatter, okay, first you should keep it at a safe distance. But then you could consider it as an energy source. The problem is that if you try to make antimatter in the laboratory, it requires much, much more energy than you would ever get out of it. It's a complete loser as an energy source. So that's really science fiction.
Hmm. But it's also kind of science fiction-y, but fact, to think that if there was equal amounts of matter and antimatter at the Big Bang, where did it all go?
I'm not sure that our experiment will ever address that question. We're interested more in, do the laws of physics apply in the same way to matter and antimatter? There are other experiments at CERN that are trying to address that question more directly. Those are at the LHC. Our experiment doesn't use the LHC in any way, in contrary to what you see in the Dan Brown films and movies. We work at a low-energy accelerator. In fact, CERN has the only accelerator in the world that works in reverse. We actually slow the antiprotons down. We need to have them at very low energy, very cold, in order to make them and hold on to them.
And how did you actually make this antimatter?
Very slowly. what you do is you take the components of the antihydrogen atom. Okay, we start with hydrogen because that's the simplest atom. Everybody remembers it from high school, hopefully. It has a proton in the nucleus with a positive charge and an electron, negatively charged, orbiting around it. That's the normal atom cartoon that we all see.
Right.
So antihydrogen is identical but opposite. So the antiproton has a negative charge and is in the center of the atom, and the positron, or anti-electron, is the thing doing the orbiting. We're at CERN because they provide us with antiprotons. You have to make those in an accelerator. And this is where Mr. Einstein comes in, E equals mc squared. What CERN does is use E, energy, to make M, mass, right?
Right.
So we use energy to produce mass. And here's the curious thing. When you do that, you always make equal amounts of matter and antimatter. In the laboratory, if you produce an antiproton, you produce a proton at the same time. That seems to be a fundamental law. And that's why we're confused about the beginning of the universe. So we make this stuff within a big accelerator and then slow it down. We want it at really cold temperatures when we combine antiprotons and positrons to make antihydrogen atoms.
Quite fascinating. And so then you sort of recycle it when you're done with it by getting rid of it. And so this could have been done years ago. Do you think, or just people wait?
No. We've been working on this steadily since, the history of the field goes to the late 80s, and there's been no pause or let up in the attempt to get this far. The last big breakthrough was in 2002. It's another experiment that we had called Athena, where we actually produced a lot of antihydrogen atoms for the first time. So we've been producing them for the last 8 years. It's only now that we've learned how to hold on to them so they don't run off and annihilate.
So you caught lightning in a bottle.
That's a good way to look at it, yes.
Yeah. Well, we want to wish you good luck.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for taking time to be with us.
Hey, it's my pleasure. And thank you for your interest.
Yeah, because we're very interested in this topic, and we'll check in with you when research continues.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
We were talking about antimatter being caught in a bottle at CERN with Jeffrey Hengst, professor in the Department of Astronomy and Physics at Aarhus University in Denmark, but he was in Switzerland when we were talking about him.